legend becomes fact. Print the legend.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Trusting in the sanity and restraint of the United States is not a strategy, and it is not an option.
We don't need no thought control.
What's a conspiracy notion out there? How much influence do you have? Was it you and your fellow neoconservatives that created the momentum towards overthrowing Saddam Hussein?
Nobody does a thing in this town without our approval.
You both were members of Skull and Bones, a secret society at Yale. What does that tell us?
Not much, because it's a secret.
Is there a secret handshake? Is there a secret code?
I wish there were something secret I could manifest.
322, a secret number?
There are all kinds of secrets.
Welcome back to Cloak and Dagger. I'm your host, Lenny Bloom, along with my co-host, the great American Judge Buster, Sherman H. Skolnick. Sherman's on assignment this evening. It's just coming up past 8 o'clock Central, and it's Saturday night, December 10th, and I'm joined by Captain Eric May of Ghost Troop. Welcome back, and thank you, Captain, for bringing your treasury of experience, knowledge, and wisdom. We're happy to have you back here at Cloak and Dagger.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be back to the flagship station, Cloak and Dagger. You treat us well, Lenny, and there's not a time we come on that there isn't something important that we talk about and learn about from you.
Absolutely mutual. Go ahead. What's the exciting news tonight?
Well, exciting in the worst of all possible ways. I want to do a macro overview of the last week from the American side, interpreting the last week as what the media itself and the public information / propaganda apparatus of the U.S. government has presented it as, which is a chance for Bush to kind of counterattack his critics and recapture the initiative, is the phrase we use down here in the lower 48. And we have to back up and remember that this started last Sunday with the Sunday talk shows here in the state, with the 911 commission coming out and formally saying that it's time for us to confront the fact that we haven't done a good job in preparing for the next attack. They stressed that our defense measures from the 911 commission, which of course you know is the 911 omission, were inadequate, and that we would very likely be hit again. So the week, day one, starts out with a reiteration of that old prophecy, self-fulfilling, of course, that the next 911 event, which we have Ghost Troop code 9112B, number 2, letter B, is not a matter of if, but of when. I guess you already knew about that, Lenny.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that was Sunday. The TV station spent the next few days playing to the hilt the idea that it was not if but when. Chris Matthews, MSNBC, actually started playing with what date would be best. What 2007 seemed to work for him. So these media whores actually talk on the open air in front of our faces about when the right time to hit us again with another terror attack will be. They've become that callous. Do you remember Marie Antoinette with the Let Them Eat Cake when she was told the peasants freeze starving? Part of that was, this was aristocratic contempt, but part of it was aristocratic ignorance. These people don't even have a clue that we're even here.
Exactly.
They see past us and through us. We're sheeple to them. So that was how things started off the week, with the media sizing us up for the next 9-1-1 event, which, of course, they say will definitely be a weapon of mass destruction, probably a nuke. Lenny, I got to say, your listeners know by now that my background was military, and it's hard for me to explain to people who aren't military that Al-Qaeda, if there were such a thing as Al-Qaeda, would be doing things like infiltrating 2- and 3-man teams across the Rio Grande and taking out a .30 caliber and shooting the tires off a gasoline truck on I-10. I mean, shutting down a section of highway, blowing up a little railroad interchange. This is the kind of stuff that real live terrorist groups that really want to wreak havoc on a foreign country resort to. What's happening is that the media and the political apparatus of the United States continually tells us that suddenly Al-Qaeda is going to appear and have another Hail Mary miracle play where they're suddenly going to go from the caves of Afghanistan and the streets of Iraq to, you know, nuclear Armageddon and perfectly placed petrochemical demolitions. So that's being set up. Simultaneously, we had Lieberman this week, as you and I discussed otherwise, come out and say that he really wasn't so much a Democrat as a supporter of the president, particularly as long as the president is conducting a war for the betterment of Israel, which Lieberman, as an American Jew, seems to feel an unusually high affinity to. Unusual for any type of American Jew, I might say. So clearly the Zionist hand is developing. Simultaneous with this, there have been strong speeches by Cheney and by Rumsfeld and to some degree by Bush saying that they're back on the counteroffensive and the media isn't telling the story correctly. And then midweek came the revival of the biggest threat the Bush boys have made since the summer terror season ended, which is the great global pandemic, which, you know, was being carried as the avian flu in the summer, and then was being so much predicted that eventually the Internet, in its kind of heartless way, decided to go ahead and call it a pejorative as the Jew flu, because they said it was going to be a biological attack by probably Israeli-designed biological agents. And then the media and administration settled on the bird flu. So currently we're talking about the bird flu. The significant thing about the bird flu, Lenny, and to tell your listeners, it's the thing with which I called today, is you remember I told you there was going to be something numerologically
significant exactly.
About the bird flu?
Yep.
Okay, well, here it is. The bird flu was first brought in, was adduced as a topic, September is when Bush started cooking this thing up, but he didn't make it formal until the day after, the Halloween, October 30th, 31st, the Sunday TV shows started talking about how the Bush people who were losing initiative then, this being around Halloween, we're going to start talking about the bird flu. Bush appeared on TV live on November the 1st at 10:10 to announce that he was putting $7 billion, 7 being kind of a numeric signature number, by the way, to anti-flu measures because we had to be worried about the bird flu. Do you know what's significant about November 1st at 10:10 in the morning, Lenny?
Tell us.
It's 11-1-1-1-1. Knock out zeros. So
right.
The code is 11111. They did it on a day that was 11 for the month, 1 for the day number, and then 10-10 means 11 because you knock out zeros. So it's one of their little, we're smarter than you are and you'll never figure it out signals. And they gave that the first time Bush did the announcement of the flu. You know, the next day was the day that the Democrats went into a revolt over the war. I don't know if you remember it, but the Democrats basically shut down Congress, the Senate, and went into a closed session
yep.
to discuss the war situation in closed session with the Republicans. You may have heard of that at the beginning of
yeah,
the
for sure.
Well, what came out around the edges of that was that clearly the Democrats were demanding accounts from the Republicans on various questions. The media felt totally anxious because they were iced out. You know, the first thing that happened when the Democrats did this parliamentary move was that the media was excluded and the cameras were turned off. But when the meeting broke up, the Republican Senate leader, Bill Frist, a medical person, interestingly enough, a doctor, who's the Republican, the Reichster in charge of the Senate for Bush, he what the hell had happened, not in those particular words, but in large part that's what he was saying. He didn't know what the hell had happened because he thought they had an agreement about the flu.
Yeah.
And that's the way he put it across, and I think he didn't understand. I think that because the flu was then being talked about in general context, he slipped up a little bit and didn't realize that it was pretty clear that the context in which the flu was being discussed was not of that prevention measure, because the Democrats wouldn't have closed the Senate and called a special meeting because they disagreed with $7 billion of preventive measures announced by Bush the day before.
They were planning history. They were arguing over how they want to plan history.
Right. They were deciding whether or not now was the time to go to the next series release. In the same way that we had the attempt of a 9112B incident on 7/28/2005, that interview between me and you, which saved Texas,
but
and Texas.
Are they planning, or are they just being told the plans?
Well, here's the deal. The thing that started in November started at, as I say, 11111, and the next day the Democrats revolted, and the Republican Senate leader, Senator Dr. Frist, sounds like a Mengele, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's set up, he's a doctor, yeah. So he's set up as a Senate leader, and it looks like he's pushing on the bio attack, man, because he's the one who came out and said, hey, the Democrats just had a deal on the flu. And, of course, you had to read between the lines to know what it meant. Now, they backed off of the whole flu thing real ricky-ticky as soon as the Democrats called them to account. Lenny, what I'm theorizing now is that in the last 6 weeks since that event happened, an accord has been reached among the great powers, and that bio attack is going to be released. It's gone to the point that I think it's a hit. I think it's a programmed hit. And I say that because this week, in the middle of Bush's, you know, gaining the initiative, restabilizing the picture week, on Tuesday, he had a Chinese doctor, heck, I don't know the guy's name, but he's the head of the World Health Organization, and he had him in a press conference, or a photo session and a couple of questions. This being immediately before Cheney went on the hard counteroffensive against Bush, or rather on the hard counteroffensive against Bush's critics. So instantaneously, within, you know, a few minutes of when Cheney was to begin, Bush had this guy from the White House, this Chinese World Health Organization leader, and all the Chinese guy had to say was basically thanks to President Bush for making such a priority of this thing starting in September of 2005. And you and I know that's when Bush started thinking about things to keep the initiative going his way after he'd mucked the summer up. But what Bush had to say was not as important as what Bush looked like. The last time we talked, I mentioned it, and I told you I had a bad feeling about it. When Bush smiles, it's sadistic. He doesn't smile for any other reason. Your American listeners and me, you know, I'm an American. Well, we're all Americans, but the United States listeners need to understand the straight shooting, straight talking, straight walking cowboy that they sold you in 2000 was a pie. That's crap. That's crapola. There's nothing of that there. This is the guy.
Well, he's a rich kid from Connecticut.
He's a Connecticut Yankee grafted on Texas. The thing people in Texas, and I'm a Texan, man. I'm a for real Texan. I spent 3 years serving up at Fort Hood when he was coked up in Kennebunkport. I mean, he's a Yankee carpetbagger. But beyond that, when he was here in Texas, perhaps his most defining moment was when he got the chance to do something that would make most men feel a little bit sick, which is that he put to death the first woman put to death in Texas in over a century, Carla Faye Tucker, this thing about 1997. The significant thing is that when Bush did it, in the presence of journalists, one of them being Paul Begala, a CNN journalist now, he started laughing hysterically at the time that they, you know, that he was his last chance to pardon her. And while he was laughing, you know, this giggling, shrill laugh, he was saying, oh, please don't kill me, oh, you know, Mr. Bill voice. So this is the kind of guy, the listeners need to understand, this guy smiles when he sticks a firecracker in a frog's mouth or up a frog's butt, or when he knows that his agents are putting a woman to death in the death house. He takes pleasure in the sick Skull and Bones cultism. And, it, you know, it's not just that variety. So when I saw him Tuesday, right before Cheney went on, coming back out, we saw it for the first time in a month and a half, the flu, and he was smiling like a kid ripping the legs off a frog, man.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that yes, it's the Damien, it's the boys from Brazil, it's the Omen.
Yeah, and you know, I got
the boys from the Brazil
here.
And the Omen show up.
You remember Socrates' claim? Well, Plato's claim through Socrates that the artists are always right, but always for the wrong reasons. Basically, they're right because they're crazy, and they get it without being able to tell you why.
Yeah.
You may have heard that Platonic argument about art.
Yeah.
Right before the war, this being the Iraq War, the second Iraq War now, my daughter and I, who she's an art student at the university, we went to go see a student exhibition, and there was one student, this being the spring, early spring of 2003, who had done one poster after another of Bush on a Hollywood-type movie thing, but his pièce de résistance was Bush as Damien. And this, of course, was the first time the idea ever occurred to me. And that's why I make sure to tell those who listen, you have to watch the man smile. If he talks about Bin Laden, I'll give you an example.
Well, I think you should go to see the movie The Omen, because at the end of it, the kid takes over the White House. That's right, there it is.
For instance, Tuesday when he was talking about how the terrorists were sure to lose, and the reason was, and he can't say this without smiling, they're just going to kill more and more women and children until we know that we have to fight them. And, of course, what he's saying between the lines, and what accounts for the smile, is that he knows he is Bin Laden. Al-Qaeda is al-CIA, duh. This is all contract killing done on schedule to support a script. You know, that's hard.
Yeah, I don't think, and let's not, just to throw out one other point here, we're not to go into it, but it supports what you're saying, and that is, you're bringing attention to the fact of somebody who he had the authority to pardon and didn't. And what's interesting is the flip side of it, by the way, is very instructive. We won't go into it now, it's for another show. But if you look at the people he pardoned and the connection with his Brownsville satanic group in Brownsville,
right,
Texas, the people around that involved in those killings, satanic killings, he pardoned those people. We'll go into that another time. Let's just stick to this. But that's basically, like, he pardoned people who were part of the Brownsville, Texas cult murder, of which he was a part of, and that's how he earned his stripes, through that cult murder, that he murdered 12 guys, 12 people.
Well, you remember
Brownsville, Texas, police were investigating it. They got called off because Daddy Bush was director of the CIA.
I heard something about that down on the Rio Grande.
And who was Daddy Bush and Barbara Bush entertaining on the night before John Lennon's assassination?
Tell me.
Why, none other than the Patsy's parents. Chapman's parents. They're all buddy-buddy friends.
Do you remember, I know that you study the Skull and Bones, of course, that particular order. When we say the Skull and Bones, we're not talking about fraternity, and we're not talking about butt slapping with towels in the locker room. What we're talking about is things like homoerotic bonding, masturbation of everybody in the plebe class except the person telling the nasty stories from his class. You know, we're talking about some pretty heavy, hardcore psychological reformulation of the people who are selected to this little sicko cult.
Yeah.
Daddy Bush being one, your boy George Bush being the other, John Kerry being another. So basically, when we talk about the Skull and Bones, we're talking about a criminal order, a Cosa Nostra of its own sort.
Yeah.
And you know, Lenny, that
demonics.
The numbers from the Skull
demonics.
And Bones order are what?
Demonic harmonics. Demonic harmonics.
322.
Yeah.
And you told me that's from Genesis. What was the passage?
Yeah, 322.
Knowing good and evil, you shall be as God. Genesis 322.
Yeah.
But what I was thinking about in connection with the fact that Bush loves death is that the saying, the motto of the Skulls is, you may remember it, what is it? The hangman is death, war is death, and death is death. That's one of their core cryptic beliefs.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that, so I say that any time that there's something involving the imposition of death, Bush smiles.
And George, so and Georgia, George has a George. Let's not forget, George has a stallions. He's got four horsemen, and he's got a barn door, and he can let the four horsemen out one at a time, and right, and that's what he's about to do. Isn't that
right.
correct?
And the sickest thing about this, the reason I say the sickest, here's the deal, Lenny. This whole thing's a war.
He's the rider on the gray horse.
It's, well, you remember the four horsemen of the apocalypse?
That's what I'm talking about, the gray horse. He's the rider on the gray horse.
Yeah, the pale horse.
The pale horse.
Yeah, that's what he envisioned himself as being.
No, the pale horse is famine. The black horse is the death, the black death. So, yeah, the Black Death. He is the rider on the black horse of the apocalypse.
Well, I think his thing is that he gets to change horses anytime as he wants, as long as people keep dying.
Yep.
And you're right. You know, part of the reason this whole 911 horse crap cabal was so successful is that it plugged into a very rudimentary vibe, which it doesn't talk much about, that being the millennial vibe among the fundamentalist Christians, who have now been turned into Christian Zionists, who think the best thing in the world to happen is for Israel to achieve all the territorial goals it has in mind. But that's been purposeful. And I think what you see here is that all this chaos that has been wreaked upon the American people, everything from Katrina to the 911 event itself to probably another 911 event we code it 911 to be, this biological threat hanging over our heads now, these things will all make the most radical right-wing evangelical Christian Zionists say that this must be God's way of saying we're in the millennium.
And
it has a certain group of adherents among whom any form of exceptional warfare, weapon of mass destruction,
and Dr. Franks,
one of those, anything released only strengthens their confidence in him as a messianic cult leader.
Yeah, and
clearly we must be in the end times.
And Frank,
you know what I mean?
The book Bush on the Couch by
right.
Franks says that he's, quote, Looney Tunes, unquote, and that he's a megalomaniac. that's read the book Bush on the Couch.
Oh, no, I've heard of it many times.
And so let's face it, if America was likened to a prison, the inmates are running the prison.
Right. Well, we've got these sociopathic, psychopathic people.
Inmates.
The
inmates are running the prison, Captain May.
What?
Captain May, the inmates are running the prison.
There's the critical report for America. Yeah, that's true. And what we do when I get together with you on the air is that we actually analyze their game plan because, as Bush often says, they are pure evil but not pure insanity. Because there is method. The insanity exists at the executive level of the 911 cabal. What's beneath is a masterpiece of Nazi party efficiency, of people following orders and carrying out missions. Lenny, this thing has been set up in such a way. Since
yeah, very tribal. Event. Tribal.
Well, part of it's tribal.
Tribal
you have,
police.
Ethnic groups who are trying to eliminate other ethnic groups under the pretext of fighting the war on terror. And that can be talked about. We have talked about it. But the big thing that I'm finding now is that more and more echelons of professionals have somehow been assuaged, have been bought off, have been told that they're not responsible. So that right now, let me give you an example.
And your Christian right, and your Christian right is what's is got this whole thing in terms of a crusade once again. They're back on their crusade.
You've got many different groups who have been assuaged or swayed in many different ways.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now we have an entire media setting us up for a biological attack. They're going to have another nuclear drill off Charleston, South Carolina. Do you remember the Charleston, South Carolina drill of the summer?
Yeah.
It was involved in the 911-2B event at Texas City on the 7th, on July 28th, that night that you and I did the interviews, which are still on the Cloak homepage, by the way.
Yeah.
That was Charleston was connected with that. So they're warming up the nuclear 911-2B scenario again in Charleston. These people, I've said it, from the beginning of our interviews together, and you probably said it before I ever met you or even thought it for myself, but these guys are not going to stop. They can't. They have committed themselves. They have burned their bridges. they've committed high treason and mass murder against their home country. So my great warning right now is that they're still sizing us up for that second 9-1-1 event, to the point that this week, the week that the president was going to recapture the initiative, what that meant was they started setting the premises through the 9-1-1 commission to say that we were going to get hit again, and they reinforced it. And then midweek, they pulled back out the flu threat, which is, you know, cultic out the wazoo, and which Bush only backed away from because his Congress, or his Senate at least, revolted on him back in November of this year.
Yeah, and everything's, it's totally Orwellian, and everything's being done, don't forget, through the Ministry of Truth that's disguised, and the Ministry of Propaganda, which is disguised.
There are so many great books to read, and so little time to read them in life, but right now, I think you pulled out one. Bush on the Couch would be a good Christmas book. Good Christmas book. 1984 can't be missed. Animal Farm would be fine too. For
yeah,
to read.
Yeah.
Or the
1984.
A friend recently.
I think 1984 is the major, major, major work. Orwell is reality.
Yeah, he.
Orwell is reality. Big Brother.
Right, and you know, even in Orwell, he sets up the premise that
double
all
speak.
The conflict is being set up by terror directed
Goldstein's.
Against its own citizens.
Goldstein's.
He had terror events in London, and one of the people in the Winston's girlfriend, sweetheart, tells him she's always thought it was the government setting it up.
So, exactly.
You know, all these ideas are rehashed. Well, I've been rehashed.
What's another good book?
Northwoods. You know, we start reinventing the wheel here. This has all been thought up over again and again and again.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, as you were saying yesterday, victors and dominant groups tend to write history and history books. So people don't get reminded that our government tried to set us up for Operation Northwoods back in, what was it, 62? Yeah, 62.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't remember that. It's not like the idea that Israel and United States Zionists could false flag us into a war is anything new. That's why they whacked the Liberty in 1967.
Goldwater. They're
trying to hit Liberty and blame it on Egypt, send it to the bottom, and get us involved in the war on their side.
Goldwater.
An Israeli attack on a U.S. naval ship, covered up totally by the military-industrial complex. You know, none of this is anything new. What's new is that it's happening so proximate together, so many different aspects of what we always feared on our government, that it might false flag attack us, that it might do a biological plague, that it might, you know, affect crops, harness the energies of the skies. All these wild fantasies are all happening at the same time, and they were all predicted. Lenny, an important other thing, if someone wanted to give a book away, The Project for a New American Century's Restructuring America's Defenses document from the year 2000, September 2000, said they needed the war, the Middle East was the place, Iraq was the first target, so we had to have a Pearl Harbor, and we got that. But what the document also said was that they were going to do space war, info war, biological war, and they specifically said biological agents can even be manufactured to attack genotypes, and this may be useful. Everything involving the entire human potential to kill fellow humans was preconceived and pre-approved in advance of the 9-1-1 event. So they've hooked up an apocalyptic scenario, Lenny. They pulled together everybody in America who believed in apocalypse and tried to make them Christian Zionists. And then you have hardcore U.S. informational complex Zionists who just want to get as many dumb Christians to kill as many Muslims as possible. I mean, it's cooked up out of Satan's cookbook, man. It couldn't be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely, Captain May, you couldn't have said it better. You took the words, you took the very words right out of my mouth.
Well, when we're not subject to people's good taste, we'll probably say a few words between ourselves, Lenny, that we might even take more out of each other's mouths. This is a real bunch of scoundrels, and I think that with the biological thing, to tail off that thought, because I know we're running up to against time here, the biological thing allows them to gradually impose an increasingly intrusive federal apparatus, and to do so, they hope, with the imploring of the public for the imposition of that apparatus. they're going to lose something in sufficient proportion in enough places to be able to achieve the effect they want to achieve by way of implementing federal control apparatus to one region after another, one city after another. This stuff is great stuff as you look at, if you look at it as a devil. You can use it to kill political enemies because they died of flu. You can use it to afflict cities that are going to do things like have a 911 truth out conference, like Orlando just did, or tried to. You can use it to target regions. You can use it to target countries, like Venezuela. You can use it to target genotypes, like Arabs. It's good stuff, and they're going to use it. And they're setting it up left and right. Before people say, you know, my God, where's this captain come off of this? Lenny, I've had three fields in the military. My three fields were, when I was 17 to 20, nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare, and I used to teach the course. When I was a young officer, military intelligence for 10 years, and then finally, public affairs. You couldn't have a better background for this war and for the millennial wars to come than weapons of mass destruction, military intelligence, and public affairs. You know, I was built to be the voice of Armageddon, man. That's my training. And it's coming. I mean, it's over the hill. It's really genocidal millennial war, aggressive imperial war, the Fourth Reich set up to create the Third World War. But what it's going to be sold as to the Hayseed Bunch, and these are my bunch, by the way, you know, the believing, trusting, patriotic, simple folk who make up this country. I call them the crackers and the coloreds. Those are my folks. This is going to be sold to them as absolute good against absolute evil, the angelic Anglos against the, you know, malicious Muslims, and ultimately to the most fanatical of my type, it's going to be sold as the millennial fulfillment of Jesus' second coming. So that's the script ahead of us, and the greatest weapon we have is the weapon, and this does assume a spiritual dimension. Look, the Bible's the thing that tells us the best weapon is truth. The truth cannot, a lie cannot stand the truth. What we do, and Lenny, you and I talk about how the cloak is becoming so much more prominent in the world equation. It's getting listened to by more and more people. These people cannot survive the light of knowledge. And yet, the powers, the apparatus for people like you and like me to create enlightenment, man, there's never been a more dangerous group of intellectuals since the Enlightenment in France than the enlightened intellectuals who are fighting the info war to try to keep the world from this pre-planned catastrophe. You there, Lenny?
Yep.
It's a mouthful, and it's an important mission that we have in front of us, but I know we're up to it because we've been doing it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I know more and more people are doing it now, and that's why they're resorting to things like this pre-planned bubonic plague crap, where they're going to start it up, see how many people they can kill, and if too big a stink gets raised, they'll stop. But right now, they're willing to use any form of warfare, any violation of any civilized moray, from homosexual rape in Abu Ghraib to institutional torture in European prisons to assassination at home against domestic enemies, to murder in the field of American officers like Colonel West Using. They're willing to do anything in any degree to try to accomplish their goal, which is to finally destroy the American Constitution, the American Republic, and the sovereignty of common men. The most dangerous document in the world against this bunch here in the United States is the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, with God's help and our work, maybe more and more people will remember that. Remember, it's not in our programming to lie down for a cabal like this. This has been won over by a vicious attack, a Pearl Harbor self-inflicted by our own government against us to pull a heist.
Yeah, the government betrayed the people.
You know how I say it more and more, Lenny, and I think how people are going to feel it more and more. think of George Bush as like an Eddie Haskell. Do you remember Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The media is like the little snitch that hangs around with Eddie. And what Eddie did is he took your sister, and her name's Lady Liberty. He took her out to the prom, and they slipped her a drug and date raped her.
Right.
That's what Bush and the Bush boys did. They have gang raped.
They date raped the country.
And the job of the media is to keep slipping them the drugs so they won't wake up and realize what's happening. You know, there were certain drugs in the last decade that were known for that, the date rape drugs, that would make people go to sleep, forget what was happening, be incapable of making decisions.
Right.
And guys were giving it to girls. That's what the media does for this bunch of killers. They allow it to happen. They rationalize it. They look the other way. And then they supply the drugs. And that's why, Cheney, that's why this...
CNN is the syringe.
Thing, man.
And CNN is the syringe.
CNN, for God's sake, the CIA... Do you remember this magician, McLaughlin, who was assistant CIA director? Well, his name was McLaughlin. He was a magician. It was his thing. He had a passion for magic tricks. Guys like this are the assistants to the organization that set up things like Al-Qaeda, Al-CIA, duh. Well, this guy now is working as a consultant for CNN, man. These media whores go from being embedded with the mainstream media, which is pretty much an instrument of Israeli foreign policy, a Zionist government, and they go from there across the street and across the Potomac over and become embedded in the White House. Then they become embedded in the congressional staff and the security apparatus and the military-industrial system. These people, then they swap around.
Like a cancer, they infiltrate the system.
Oh, man, it's like hippies at a commune with everybody zapping everybody in bed, Lenny. I mean, they're like a communicable disease.
Yeah.
These people are all embedded with each other.
Yeah.
And they go around in circles, and it all becomes inbred. And the only thing they have in common is that the only people who have anything in common with them are each other.
Yeah,
and that's why you get things like, and I got to say, Andrea Mitchell, NBC's chief foreign correspondent, wife of Greenspan. Andrea Mitchell, I must say, is Jewish. Greenspan, I must say, is Jewish. Andrea Mitchell was talking about how in Europe, Condi Rice, this being yesterday, Mitchell was talking yesterday, Friday afternoon, about how Condi Rice had a raw time of it in Europe. And I'm sure all the people living on the other side of the pond over there in Europe will be familiar with that more than Americans. And the thing that she had a rough time, of course, about was torture. Now, Fox News has been putting out left and right that the European people who had been kidnapped and rendered to foreign countries were kidnapped and rendered with the consent of the governments of Europe. And Andrea Mitchell came out and said, of course, this is all true, but the foreign ministers all attacked Mrs. Rice and demanded explanations. And she said, and of course they've been involved in the kidnapping and torture of their own citizens, but they can't say that to their own people, of course. And she's saying this to, you know, to what, 10, 20 million people in America, live TV. And what she's saying, you need to understand carefully, she's saying the truth of the matter is European governments have been complicit in extradition and rendition and torture, but they don't want their people to know it. So we in the open American media are helping the open European media to keep a secret secret, which should be open known to the people of Europe. And it's been conveniently buried. And Andrea Mitchell, this queen, this duchess of the modern info war, is saying, of course the governments and the media can't tell people that. And when you turn it around, you realize, my God, that's how they feel about us, too. Of course the government can't tell us that, this, that, or the other. As a matter of fact, the government can't tell us anything. The only people who can tell us anything are the media, and they'll figure out what to tell us after they talk to the government. Orwellian. We come back to Orwell. Lenny, it's always a pleasure.
It's always a great pleasure to have you on to update us.
Well, I'm going to keep working away on my side of the info war, and you keep looking out for yours. Tomorrow's a great day because the political beast gathers its legs under it on Sunday when all the media whores and the political pimps get together on the Sunday morning talk shows and figure out what the policy is. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised if those who are Republican apologists didn't say, the president is looking so presidential in the face of this possible looming Asian crisis. It's the best he's looked since, guess what day, Lenny? 9-1-1. They always come back to that. The president's lost so much political capital since 9-1-1. Boy, you know that all of them, Democrats, Republicans, everybody in between,
yeah,
the amount of hostility they pretend to feel towards each other, Lenny, branch of government to branch of government, party in government to party in government, is nothing but a facade. The only people they really feel distant from and hostile to are the American people. This government has slipped off its constitutional foundation, and it's renegade. It has betrayed its people.
It's
every branch.
It's
the
a loose.
Supreme Court brought this
it's a loose cannon.
Political deal in 2000.
It's
I'm not saying it wouldn't have been a political deal if it had gone the other way. What I am saying is that the Supreme Court ain't acting like the Supreme Court.
No.
The Congress stuck its head, shall we say, in the dirt and be polite, and pretended not to see what was happening.
Yeah.
Pretended not to see when the man happened, when the man assassinated people who didn't go along with it. The media has been the camp followers, the horror core, and that's why they got caught embedded. The military, man, I can't tell you how ashamed I feel of the military when every time I turn on the TV set now, I'm seeing one wimp journalist after another talking about how the military are nothing but cowards who won't talk truth to power. And they're right. They're right. These are my brother and sister officers, and the media whores are right. And they know they're right. So they make fun of the military. Every one of these groups I've described has failed.
Well, the military lost control, too. The military lost control, too.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, the military didn't just lose control. Certain portions of the military collaborated in an attack to kill Americans.
Well, the military is supposed to be guided by the Constitution. But part
exactly.
of the military started to work away from the Constitution.
Lenny, if we ever get to the bottom of this, we're going to find out that going back to
the top of it, you mean?
We're going to find that from about the time I left the military, and I left the military in the late 90s, and accelerating after 9-1-1, there has been an entire reprogramming of the military leadership of America.
Well, it was all done by, you remember what happened? When they took out the first Reagan and put in the doppelganger, Haig took control. He showed, they always show himself. You just have to be watching, that's all.
Now, that's true, but I think they've re-
I'm in control here in the White House, in the basement in the White House. Who was it? Haig.
Cheney.
No, Haig.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sorry. He said, I am in control. I remember that.
He did show himself. Haig showed himself, and everybody thought it was... They glanced over it, but us media scientists caught it. So that's where it started.
One more recommendation for reading that I think really probably explains what we're talking about with different systems of government sitting down and being co-opted by a fascist and power scenario. Everyone should at some point in their life read William Shirer's Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. Shirer being an American journalist who was there when Hitler came to power and there all the way up to the initiation and into World War II. Because he talks extensively about how one system, one echelon, one group, one guild after another gave way and collaborated with Hitler. And the same thing has been done. If there's ever an extensive investigation, it will be found that one policy after another was relaxed, was waived, was warped, as if by magic, like the CIA, which has magicians working as its assistant director, as if by magic, all these mirrors have been twisted just a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But the overall product is that was it truth is lies, freedom is slavery? What was the third one? Truth is lies, freedom is slavery.
Hitler was a British agent. That's the third one.
Lies,
a great new book by Greg Hallett. Hitler was a British agent. which a Tavistock creation.
I invite people, by the way, I've had many questions about how to get in touch with our stuff. People should Google Ghost Troop, GHOSTTROOP. We have a Ghost Troop group, and I moderate it, and we have an extensive publication history. Of course, you plug into our main site right now through my name up on your front page. Anyone who can click that on will find links to other things. So read what's good to know and be skeptical. There's no motto in military intelligence, which is trust no one, and I found that to be good advice in the info war. But Lenny, let me tell you one last thing, and this has got to be an inspirational point for anybody listening to this. My training has always been military, and I haven't done a single thing in the info war, which I've been in for 30 months now, since the invasion of Iraq. Those who want to know why can look at my site. There's nothing I've done that wasn't taught me by the Army. You know, Melville, when he wrote Moby Dick, said, the sea has been my Harvard and my Yale college. Well, for me, the Army was my Harvard and my Yale college. I never got to go to Harvard and Yale, but I went to the Army. The Army teaches one thing straight out of the Infantryman Basic Rifle book, which is that when you were ambushed, when you were attacked, when you were blindsided, like we were on 911, or like a 10-man patrol walking down a trail in Afghanistan or Hanoi or rather Vietnam, wherever, you know what the proper thing to do when you are ambushed is? The proper thing
no,
to do
no, no, what, tell me.
Turn into the ambush and attack the ambush. Because the one thing no one who ever set up an ambush expects to have happen is a counterattack. An ambush is built to wipe you out if you stay where you are, wipe you out if you move forward or backward. But an ambush is not built as a defense. So if you get counterattacked, the ambush breaks up. It's the best chance the attack party has to break up the ambush.
Interesting.
And from the very start, I and Ghost Troop, those who have tried to fight the info war my way, and we run from dozens to sometimes hundreds when events are odd, have always fought the idea, the war, the info war, with the idea that the best defense of America was to take the offense to these bastards. Let the word out. Attack them. Question their media. Pick up a phone. Write a letter. Exchange information. Gossip. Let rumor fly. Anything. But don't wait for things to clarify. And don't wait for things to rectify, because that stuff ain't real. What's real is us creating our own network of information. We are becoming, collectively, we're becoming the cyber network. We're becoming the people's network. We're becoming an international network. So this network that you and I are part of is going to end up being bigger than the CBS network or the NBC network or any network. We're collectively something that cannot be contained by the establishmentarian networks, and that's our power. And that's a power they never, ever thought we'd have in this degree. So that's a happy and inspirational thought, that there is a way out of this ambush called 9/11 and the 9/11 cabal, and the way out of this ambush is through this ambush. Turn into it and take it on.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like good medicine.
Well, it's hard advice, and it's stern advice, but it's the right advice. And that's when, you know, it's when
Captain May, good heap medicine.
Follow stern but necessary policy.
Yeah.
That they earn the title of soldiers, and it just boils my blood when I hear these sniveling wimps from things like the New York Times, where I've got snitches at the time who call me Captain May, and they sound scared when they have to try to talk about anything real. Because
right.
Reality is dangerous to them. They don't. They're courtiers. They're butt kissers. They're butt snippers.
Right.
That's the extent of their journalistic integrity.
Yeah.
We deal with these people all the time in Ghost Troop, and they're scared to go where we go. But then I see them get together in the little forums that they have, broadcasts on C-SPAN or CNN or whatever the heck they're going to be on.
Yeah.
And they can't let enough contempt out. Contempt at officers of the American Constitution who are too scared to say that this is a bunch of rotten dictatorship. Now, these same media whores say nothing about the fact that, for God's sake, they've been covering up for 2, 3, 4 years about the fact that Bush slipped and said dictatorship would be a great form of government if only he could be good dictator. You remember that gaffe?
Yes, I sure do.
Man, if they only played that about twice a week, the whole info war would be over, right?
Right.
You don't have to, you wouldn't have to, man, I saw MSNBC take one of these talent coaches. You know how the people who work in the media, of course, the talent you see talking, they're just the best liars on the team. That's how they got the job.
Yeah.
Well, there are people who actually coach them on how to lie, and there are people who tell them what goes wrong with their expression and whatnot. They pulled one of these people up and let them loose on a Bush speech for about 3 minutes, and this person was proving that Bush has a mixed expression on his face. He lifts one side of his face because he has contravailing ideas, and he's lying.
Hey, Captain May, don't you think that Lenny Bloom and Captain May should be allowed into the press conferences to ask questions of Bush? I mean,
Lenny, I think so. Absolutely, there is no democracy in
America. I think
no
you and I should be
North
given
America.
Absolute protection.
Would be the best thing since was it Don Quixote and Sancho Panza?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to go get us some windmills.
Well, we've got you up there with the cloak and dagger represents our air fleet. So you're our naval lieutenant, and I represent the ground forces. So it would be a grand entente between us, Lenny, and I think they would shake if we came into the room because they wouldn't have an idea what to say. The interesting thing, of course, is that any real question that you asked from that press conference would be an impossibility from the moment it was asked.
Yeah.
Because real information cannot be exchanged in those press conferences. They're all, the press conferences, everything that's built on government information is a facade built on a facade.
Yeah, propaganda.
I'll tell you, I saw a gal at a New York press conference. Seymour Hersh was there. And a few other prominent journalists, of course, they were deriding the military as lacking spine, which, what the hell, I mean, it's true. I'm ashamed of it, and I'd like to smack anybody who said it, but it's kind of like somebody telling you, you know, your girlfriend's a tramp, and, you know, you find out your girlfriend's a tramp. I mean, what can you do? You want to beat them up, but can you? You know, you shouldn't. So this is what Seymour Hersh and all these people were saying, but one of these gals, a New York Times editorial writer, was saying they were basically doing one mea culpa after another about how they failed in their duty as journalists, and they have very badly since 9/11. And she said, yes, but there are people with so many absurd ideas. It seems like every third person I come up to now tells me that the World Trade Centers were knocked down by the CIA. And when she said this to this assembly of journalists and academics and her fellow co-panelists and whatnot up at the table, the thing that was apparent, this being a C-SPAN thing, you know, a minor thing, this is Friday. The thing that was apparent was it was like she had told a bad joke. People started looking at their navel.
Uh-huh.
You know, people started flecking dandruff off their shirt.
Yeah, they didn't want to.
Nobody made eye contact with anybody.
Yeah, they were afraid to admit the truth.
And then you saw her expression change, and you realize, my God, this chick actually didn't know yet. And now she does. All in one instant on national TV, you could see that she went from thinking this is something that had been getting inside her skull through her backwards media channels, and the way she presented it, she was expecting reinforcement against this absurd idea, and what she got was the deafening sound of silence.
Yeah.
So there are good things out there. There are little hints out there that even the journalists are catching on now, and the more prestigious they are, the slower they'll be to catch on, or more likely the slower they'll be to admit they've caught on. And you had one thing when Bush gave a speech to the Foreign Relations Council, one of the big U.S. policymaking entities, this being his Wednesday speech, I believe, when he didn't get a bit of applause the whole time, this being a 30-minute speech, when he talked about the war on terror, but he did have a line which he got mandatory applause for. He said, I just want to say, you know, we will never back down to the global war on terror so long as I am commander-in-chief. And, of course, he expected to have a big old good cheerleader George round of applause.
We wouldn't even have to ask him a question. All we'd have to do, Captain May, is show up and start laughing at him, and that would be enough. He'd blow his top.
Well, now listen to this, though.
Bush would blow his top.
Line, which is, we won't back down as long as I'm commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
It was another of those deafening silences and then a slow initiation of applause that never got above a few decibels. This thing is falling apart, and they wanted to do this flu series back, remember, November the 1st, 11-1 at 10-10, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, 1-1. They wanted to start this 6 weeks ago, and they almost lost control of the Senate trying it. And now Bush is trotting this stuff back out, but this is all tenuous stuff. This presidency is close to implosion, and that's exactly what it needs to do. The American system is a corrupt system in many respects, but it is a system. And Bush came in and tried to impose the Nazi system on top of the American system. And going back to the Lady Liberty thing, Lady Liberty has been abused and drugged, but she's waking up. She's a strong gal, and she's got a constitution of her own. And she's going to be pugnacious when she finally gets back on her feet. And that's when scores will really be settled. I know there are tough, bad guys working for the Bush boys, false flag killing Americans, intimidating our women and children, killing the brave people who stand against them because they want to keep a lid on this. But they are losing control of this equation. And
yes,
that brings joy to the hearts of all the people who are standing up for the right in this matter. And eventually, we will become the dominant voice. They pushed it too far, and they haven't succeeded in anything, Lenny. The only thing they succeeded in doing is putting us in exactly what I predicted in the Houston Chronicle we would wind up in if we went into war in Iraq. Quicksand.
Yep.
And Lenny, I got to end with my favorite joke.
Go ahead.
Lenny Bloom, what does Captain May say is the right way to get out of quicksand? Quick. Let's leave them laughing, Lenny, and one more next time.
A big salute to you, Captain May of Ghost Troop. Thanks
for
being
here.
Mine,
this is Captain May and Ghost Troop signing out.
Read it yourself instead of asking the government why, because that will cause the propaganda to die. Good night, Captain May.
Good night, Lenny. Good night, all.